It is Monday, January 7th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. Ahead on Ozarks, postcards sent from the past tell the history of Fort Smith. A new program aims to provide teachers to the districts that need them most. And a Fayetteville-based communications company expands its global reach. But first, freshman Republican Congressman Tom Cotton of Arkansas's 4th District is working to rally opposition to the nomination of Republican Chuck Hagel to become Secretary of Defense. Speaking yesterday on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos, Cotton, who served in Iraq, said previous statements by Hagel could disqualify him.
Said the war couldn't be won. No one had told us that when we were fighting it in 2006. He delayed emergency funding for the troops in 2007. Even after the surge succeeded in 2008, he still said that it wasn't because of the troops addition. When you add that to his dangerous views on Iran and Hezbollah and Hamas and terrorism, as well as his strange hostility towards Israel, I think the Senate should oppose Mr. Hagel as Secretary of Defense. There are many other qualified Democratic defense professionals who the president could nominate.
During the broadcast, Cotton also said that he wants to see more spending cuts as Congress continues to discuss the nation's budget. Efforts by Arkansas's congressional delegation to keep the A-10 combat jets in Fort Smith may receive an important boost. The Air Force Chief of Staff is expected to tour the 188th Fighter Wing on January 18th. Congressman Tim Griffin says a decision to move the jets, outlined in part of the December defense spending bill, is not an effective use of taxpayer money.
The 188 is outstanding. At a time when money is scarce, we ought to be rewarding and maintaining units like the 188. And what they can keep doing is, A, keep performing with excellence, which they're going to do, and B, take the opportunity to communicate with the Chief of Staff of the Air Force when he gets there about why it's such a wonderful location for the A-10s.
The General's visit is part of the congressional delegation's continuing efforts to save the airbase at Fort Smith that currently employs close to 1,000 Arkansans. Former Congressman Asa Hutchinson said he intends to run for governor of Arkansas in 2014. He is the former Undersecretary of the Department of Homeland Security and is currently leading the National Rifle Association's School Safety Project. Hutchinson says he is committed to both the project and the upcoming campaign.
I intend to be a candidate for governor in 2014, even though that's a couple years away. I wanted my intentions to be known. Susan and I are excited about the opportunity to be of service again to the state of Arkansas and look forward to it. I do have a commitment to the school safety project that is so critical to our nation and to our state. After the tragedy in Connecticut, and so I'm committed to fulfilling that responsibility and be working on that for the next couple months.
Hutchinson says his official bid will be made after he completes his work with the NRA. In his weekly radio address, Governor Mike Beebe is emphasizing the importance of more Arkansans registering to become organ donors this year. With over 300 patients waiting for donations statewide, the governor is encouraging 80% of the adult population to join programs to help people receive organs and live healthy lives. Donations, Beebe says, also help in improving the morale of patients and families in crisis.
Time and again, we hear stories about how transplants give seriously ill patients a second chance at life. We can imagine the desperation these patients and their loved ones feel while waiting for a donor match, as well as their relief once a donor is found. Similarly, we hear about the good feelings a donor family experiences during a troubling time. While these donations come at times of loss, they often provide solace in a time of grief.
Those interested in becoming an organ donor and finding more information can visit donatelifearkansas.org. The Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department will hold a news conference at 2 o'clock this afternoon to announce an interstate improvement project for the area. According to a news release by the department's Fort Smith office, the rehabilitation project will improve 7 miles of Interstate 540 between Interstate 40 and Highway 22 in the Van Buren and Fort Smith area. The work will include the replacement of 9 bridges, improvements to 4 bridges, and the installation of signs in Crawford and Sebastian counties. The total price tag for the interstate rehabilitation project in the two counties is $78.8 million. Statewide, the program is set to improve about 450 miles of interstates, costing an estimated $1.2 billion. A startup company based at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville that is working on a more sustainable shopping bag has received a leg up with a sizable award of grant funding. Cyclewood Solutions is a client of the UA Genesis Technology Incubator at the campus's Arkansas Research and Technology Park. The company has received a $150,000 National Science Foundation grant to help continue development of a prototype called the Xylo Bag. Whereas typical polyethylene plastic bags found at many retailers aren't biodegradable and forever sit intact in landfills, the Xylo Bag is made of an organic polymer derived from wood. The bags are compostable and will reportedly degrade in about 150 days, putting it in compliance with regulations either in place or in the works that ban the use of plastic bags in cities of 25 states. Consumer sentiment dropped in the fourth quarter of 2012 for the Fort Smith region. That's according to a preliminary report released Friday by the Center for Business Research and Economic Development at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith. According to a news release by the center, the index of consumer sentiment for the region was 52.2, down from 61.2 during the previous quarter. The preliminary numbers for the quarter are also lower than the 58.3 score reported in the fourth quarter of 2011. According to the report, consumer sentiment index scores below 100 reflect less optimism about the economy than scores above 100. However, the perceptions about jobs in the region remained relatively unchanged from the previous quarter. 55% of the survey respondents felt that jobs were hard to get, a drop of 1% from the previous quarter. Meanwhile, 3% of survey respondents, the same as last quarter, felt that jobs are plentiful in the Fort Smith region. Forecast calls for partly cloudy skies tonight, with a low from 28 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 30 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Tuesday, partly cloudy in the morning, then overcast, with a 20% chance for rain. Highs in the low to mid-50s. Tomorrow evening, overcast with a 50% chance for rain, a low of 37 in northwest Arkansas. Overcast with a 60% chance for rain and a low of 41 in the Arkansas River Valley. Late last week, Mitchell Communications, a Fayetteville-based communications firm with a global reach, announced it was being acquired by Dentsu, a 111-year-old firm founded in Japan, with headquarters in Tokyo and New York City. Just a few hours after the announcement, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to Elise Mitchell, the founder and CEO of Mitchell Communications.
When Mitchell Communications began nearly 20 years ago, it was a small operation. Elise Mitchell, the founder and still CEO of Mitchell Communications, was likely to be the person making a phone call on behalf of a client. Over the past 18 years, Mitchell Communications has grown exponentially. The firm's portfolio includes Walmart, Hilton Hotels and Resorts, DoubleTree Hotels, Procter & Gamble, J.B. Hunt Transport, Tyson Foods, and Southwestern Energy. Mitchell was named the 2012 Small Agency of the Year by the Holmes Report and earned the same award from PR Week in 2011. Friday morning, Elise Mitchell broke the news of the acquisition at 2 a.m., working on Tokyo time, to her staff and others. About 9 hours later, I met her in her office in the old Ozark Theater building on College Avenue in Fayetteville. I asked her about the modest beginnings of Mitchell Communications nearly 20 years ago.
It's actually been almost 18 years in the making, Kyle, if you can believe that. We started Mitchell Communications Group when my husband and I moved here in the mid-90s. And back then, for those who were there, remember it, was the community was so much smaller. It was a lovely place to come. And when we came here, we came from a big city. We came from Memphis. And we came because we could see that it would be an amazing place to both live and work. And we only had our daughter at the time, who was a year and a half. She's now in college. And it has been a wonderful place to raise a family and to build a business. So we feel very blessed to have been here in Northwest Arkansas as the place to build this company.
Did you have a, I'm sure you did, but what was your plan when you started that company? Could you see the where you are now Was that part of the vision?
Oh, gosh, I wish I could say I had this huge vision to accomplish this great thing. Absolutely not. People often say, did you want Mitchell to become big? I said, no, not at all. I just wanted to be the best. And what I've learned along the way is that growth often follows success. And we're so honored by that because the types of clients that we work with, many of them are based here in Northwest Arkansas. Walmart, Tyson, J.B. Hunt, Sam's Club, so many really amazing companies in their own right. And so it became a great match for us to be here when many of them were really coming on the scene to take, prominence in their industry. So, no, I didn't see it, but I'm not surprised when I see the types of business partners that we've been able to work with. It's been a great blessing for us.
Now, almost two decades in, this new development represents some change. What does change? What doesn't change?
Great question. When we first shared the news, we started with our own employees, of course, because they're our family here. And they had the same questions. They were so excited about the potential opportunities for us to be able to work. And we do now on a national and global scale, but on a much bigger and broader sense. They were excited about that will change is the opportunities for them to grow and develop. But what won't change are the things that are the most important things to us. And really, this was a part of my decision process in considering the options that we had. It was a deal breaker for me if we could not remain Mitchell, because the heart and the soul of this company is our people, and that stems from this fantastic region. But to keep our brand, our values, our culture, our home base here in Northwest Arkansas were absolutes. And so those things won't change at all. But what will change is we just hope we keep getting bigger and better to serve our clients' needs, because that's our top priority.
Any trepidation about getting bigger? You've gotten so much bigger than when you started. I mean, that's always kind of an unknown. What getting bigger might mean.
Yes, with any kind of change brings challenge. And I tell our people, let's don't ever be afraid of challenge, because we're good at complexity. We're excellent at managing through uncertainty. I think most people in creative professions are, so that's something that comes very naturally to us. But I also tell them that, people along the way told me, oh, you'll lose your culture. You'll lose what makes Mitchell special when you hit 25 people, 50 people, 100 people. And that hasn't proven to be the case. And there's one simple reason why. We've been intentional about what matters. And what matters to us is our values, those things that make our company special, our unique approach to business. We tend to do things very differently than other types of communications firms. And we've come to be very proud about that, because we feel like it sets us apart a bit and makes us a unique business partner that people want to be with.
You'll still be right here. Your people will still be right here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. This remains our home base. In fact, not only do we have this amazing building here in the Ozark Theater Building as our home, which, by the way, my parents had their first date here when they were in college in the 50s, if you can believe that, back when it was a movie theater. I know most people in the community do, and we often have visitors to the building that say, I remember coming here as a child to watch movies. So we're so proud of the creative legacy of this building. So we don't want to move from here. We love it here. And we also just now expanded next door into the 70 North College building, and we've taken a good bit of that. So we'll see what comes. We want to be open to opportunity and growth, but we want it to come naturally in the way that it should, by earning the right to have those opportunities.
When you start something yourself, it has your name on it, and now you're working with other people. I mean, this is something you built. And you'll still be here, but not sadness, melancholy, that something that you built and started with you and a few other people will now be, other people have something of a say in it?
Well, people have asked me that question, is was it hard for you to think about selling a company after you built it basically from the kitchen table? And I said, well, I feel exactly the way I do about when I watched my daughter graduate from high school this spring. When I watched her walk across the stage, a graduate of Fayetteville High, I was so proud of her. And it made me stop and think. My husband and I talked about it all the years that we'd worked together to parent her, and she survived us, much to her credit. She made us so proud, but we had so many happy memories of the past and all that it had taken to get there. great pride to watch her walk across that stage and on into college. A little bit sad that that part of our life had come to an end, but the strongest feeling we had was excitement about what the future holds. And I thought to myself, gosh, that's exactly how I feel about the company. Proud of the work and the memories to get here. A little sad to see this part come to an end, but more than anything, excited about the future.
Finally, you've had a unique opportunity to see your business grow as Northwest Arkansas has grown. Do you have any kind of concept of what Northwest Arkansas might feel like or look like 10, 15, 20 years from now?
Yes, I'm really proud to be a member of the Northwest Arkansas Council and have followed their great work and been actively engaged in the economic development blueprint that they've developed for our region. Such a visionary organization, Mike Malone and his team are, to think about how we stand as a region. We are stronger together. And it's okay on Friday nights for us to go against each other on the football field, but all the other times, we are so proud to be together. And I tell people, Northwest Arkansas is my home. Well, I love Fayetteville dearly, and Mayor Jordan and I talk all the time about how I will always be his greatest champion for this great city. But I feel like the region is our home. And for us to be able to have this kind of positive exposure for our company is really a reflection on the region and the other businesses and entrepreneurs in the area and the big corporations that have brought so much honor and recognition to our community. I think it's only going to be bigger and better from here.
Elise, thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Thanks, Kyle.
Elise Mitchell is the founder and CEO of Mitchell Communications. Friday, it was announced the firm was being acquired by Dentsu, a firm with headquarters in Tokyo and New York City. Mitchell will remain headquartered in Fayetteville. I talked with Elise Mitchell in her office just a few hours after that announcement had been made. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. A new program of the College of Education and Health Professions aims to address teacher shortages in state schools by placing fellows in districts beginning fall of 2013. I recently spoke with Benton Brown, director of Arkansas Teacher Corps, along with Gary Ritter, one of the faculty directors, who started by saying the program is very similar to a national program many are familiar with.
Teach for America is a great analog to this. We're modeling ourselves after Teach for America, but focusing on the state of Arkansas. So we're creating a very state-specific Teach for America program in which we hope to capitalize on the geographic proximity, you know, working only in Arkansas, and also capitalize on the fact that we have, because of the geographic proximity, we have greater access to these teachers all year round. So we hope that we can provide even better professional development throughout the year and more targeted professional development prior to the teachers going out into the classroom.
I believe you mentioned, and correct me if I'm wrong when we spoke prior, that Teach for America wasn't reaching the school districts in Arkansas that really needed it.
It's they're not reaching all the districts in Arkansas that really need it. They're definitely reaching many districts that really need them. However, there just aren't enough Teach for America teachers to expand into all the districts where they're needed.
I think that what we're trying to do is complement what Teach for America is already doing in the state of Arkansas. That Teach for America is taking districts that are in need of good teachers, that are struggling to find teachers in certain areas like math and science, and they're placing teachers in those areas to teach for, 2 years. What we're hoping to do is expand that geographic area to the entire state of Arkansas instead of just focusing on that one area, because what we found through talking with districts and superintendents is that there are actually many schools outside of that geographic area that Teach for America serves, and they are actually in need of great teachers, and Teach for America is really just not able to expand geographically to the entire state, where we have an opportunity to do that with our program.
So what are some of these areas that you will be servicing?
We're focusing on areas that are central Arkansas. Central and southern Arkansas are kind of the key areas. While we're open to districts all across the state, those are the areas of the state that we know already have teacher shortages and can tell us right now that they need teachers for those high-need subject areas like math and science. And so, Little Rock down towards Texarkana, Pine Bluff, and even southeast Arkansas, there are areas of the state that aren't serviced by Teach for America that are in need of great teachers, especially in those high-need areas of middle school and high school science and math.
Teach for America services the Delta, mainly the Mississippi Delta region.
Well, so we've mentioned that math and science are the areas that teachers are needed the most. So does that mean that the people that are applying to be teachers need to have degrees in that area, in the math and science area?
Those are the high need areas that we know we're going to have a large amount of teachers in. It doesn't mean that we won't take, we'll take applicants from any major. And the reason is because there's also in some of these smaller districts, there are going to be other positions that will become available that they're unable to fill that may be in English or may be in social science or fine arts and things like that. To the extent that we need to be able to fill those positions as well, we just know that those math and science content areas are the highest need, but we're hoping to fill gaps in other areas as well.
We aren't requiring, however, that any of our applicants have specific training. For example, someone may have been trained in science, be very good at math, and a district may need a ninth grade algebra teacher. Certainly a science-trained person could step in and do that. Or they may have been trained in math, but like social studies, and the school needs a social studies teacher. We're just suggesting that a lot of the need is going to likely be from science and math type disciplines.
Throughout the summer, this summer, teachers will go through an extensive training program on the curriculum in Arkansas. So you will help them become a master.
Exactly. Right. I mean, the program is set up to train them on the Arkansas standards, get them good proven practices of teaching, and make sure that get them ready to be a teacher, because they're not traditionally trained to be a teacher. And that's what we want to focus on doing, is making sure we get them not only the content, but the pedagogy and the necessary tools that they need to be successful in the classroom.
We have math and science trained people who aren't willing to get an additional degree, aren't going to go back and get another undergrad degree, but would like to try teaching and think they may be good at it. So we think that, yes, it would be ideal if maybe we could somehow give them 2 years of training in pedagogy, but you can't. And in fact, with the 2 years of pedagogical training they're missing, they spent 2 years of training in their content area. So that's great. And so what we do is we work with folks who have the content training, who are clearly clever and adaptable and smart. They've shown that by the high grades they're going to have and the rigorous interview process they're going to go through. So we're hopeful and confident that the research has shown and experience has shown that smart folks trained in a content area and at least in an introductory way trained in pedagogical training can then pick a lot of it up on the job. And certainly they won't be as great in month one as they will be in month 36 of teaching. No one is. But they're going to learn a lot, and we're very confident in the ability of smart, content-trained people to figure out lots of these things with the support that the university is going to provide.
So support that the university will provide, how will these teachers be paid? Is that an okay question to ask?
Sure. They're regular teachers. They're going to work in the school district. They'll be paid school district salaries, which in southwestern Arkansas, southeastern Arkansas are not as high as school district salaries are up in this corner of the state. We will also provide them with a $5,000 stipend for being awarded an Arkansas Teacher Fellowship as a member of the Arkansas Teacher Corps. However, we don't expect these are students who are solely seeking financial gains as part of their career rewards. We think they probably care about money just like everyone else does, but they care about a challenge. They probably are mission-oriented and care a bit about giving back. We've spoken to a lot of undergrads through focus groups to figure out if this sort of program would be appealing to them. And one of the students gave a really interesting quote that I think was representative of some of his peers' views, that I'd like to go down and try and help in areas of economic disadvantage. I think I could be good at it, but I wasn't going to go down on my own and just drive down there as an individual. However, as part of a program with a group of peers, so they'll be in cohorts of four or five or six in a given school or in a given district, I might view it as a bit of an adventure, something that we can do together to do our best to try and make a difference. And I think those are the kind of students that we'll be getting.
Well, I did an AmeriCorps program. So, and it's similar to that, yeah.
It's similar to America, to the Peace Corps to some extent, mm-hmm. although focused on teaching, Teach for America. The Jesuit Volunteer Corps is a similar program that I did. In fact, a lot of us who are putting this program together are connected to either New York City Teaching Fellows, Teach for America, or a similar type of volunteer program.
Well, and we mentioned that. And so then, Benton, you participated in Teach for America. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience?
Sure. Being from Arkansas, I don't think that I, and being from Northwest Arkansas specifically, I don't think that I understood exactly why Arkansas was so low on the totem pole in terms of quality of education. After leaving the state to go to school, and finding out that, hey, you know, Teach for America is placing in Arkansas, and it's because there are school districts in Arkansas that are, you know, they're struggling to find good teachers. They're struggling with student achievement. And then when you see that firsthand, and I taught in the Delta and on the Arkansas side of the Delta, and you know, you really see that there are so many areas of the state that are still struggling to increase student achievement, to get great teachers in the classroom, struggling to get students that will graduate and go to college and make sure that they're able to get a great education. And so when you see that firsthand, and you're in a classroom, and you see the struggles that a teacher and the students and the families in those areas go through, you really buy into this movement to increase education across the board.
May I ask where and what you taught?
Sure. I taught in Helena, West Helena at Central High School. I taught high school math.
And this isn't limited to just recent graduates. I mean, anybody who wants to get out and help Arkansas and help Arkansas schools, I mean, can do that.
We have an open door policy. We will have a rigorous interview process, and we'll attempt to do a bit of what Teach for America does and only accept the best and brightest. We imagine that this is the kind of program that's taken advantage of by recent college graduates, just based on Teach for America and other programs. However, we're open to many others. We know some folks who are finishing up their PhD that may apply. We've heard of folks who've been in the workforce for many years who are interested in coming back and thought, well, I'm not going to go get another bachelor's degree. But now that this route would allow him or her into the classroom, this seems interesting and appealing to those sorts of folks. So we want to open it up across the board.
Well, and it's and you mentioned that, and it's a good experience too. It sounds like a great thing to put on a resume.
No, I imagine if we're interviewing applicants for our PhD program, that would definitely be something that would be appealing on someone's resume. Interestingly, that is one of the criticisms of Teach for America, that this is just a way for young Ivy Leaguers to pad their resume at the expense of poor children. In our experience, that's not at all the case, or we wouldn't be trying to replicate and build a program like that here in Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, it's not selfish. I mean, I don't think there's selfish motives really there. Yeah.
Right. The closest thing to a selfish motive would be, this is a job where you feel like you're doing something meaningful. And so that is certainly beneficial to the individual. So I guess if that's selfish, we'll take it.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of sacrifice here as well. I mean, you know, students with math and science majors that are math and science majors can go and get high paying jobs elsewhere. And I think most math and science majors know that. And so, you know, there is a sacrifice, but like Dr. Ritter said, I mean, this is an opportunity to really change the lives of students that they may not have as an engineer or as a, you know, in some other field in math and science, because they may not just have that opportunity to have a connection with students or individuals in that way. And so I really think that, you know, it is a sacrifice, but it's also rewarding.
Well, so this is first year, 2013-2014, how many teachers and districts are you going to be working with?
So we're looking for 30 to 40 individuals to be first-year fellows for the program.
Will this first year provide the foundation for this program to grow?
This is our hope. Everyone who starts out in year one, we expect all of them to come back and complete a year two and complete a year three, and then we'll keep adding on cohorts to that.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Benton Brown is director of Arkansas Teacher Corps. Gary Ritter is a faculty director. Those interested in applying for the program should note that the early deadline is January 18th. However, they will take applicants until March 15th. Though keep in mind, positions could be filled by then. For more information, arkansasteachercorps.org. Dr. Kevin L. Jones, Assistant Professor of English and Rhetoric at University of Arkansas Fort Smith, has prepared a book on the history of Fort Smith. It's a picture book of sorts. See, Jones tells the story through postcards. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis recently spoke with Jones, who started the conversation by telling how he chose this medium.
In the beginning, it was from the Postcard History series through Arcadia Publishing. That was the format that they suggested. They also have a series entitled Images of America, which uses more of regular photography and that kind of thing. But the Postcard History series is strictly postcards, and so the narrative had to be told through the graphic images.
So what stories of Fort Smith's history are told in this book?
I tell the story from the origins of the fort in 1817 all the way up to about 1966 or so, with more current aerial shots and of local businesses in the late 60s, novelty items and that kind of thing, motels and Handy Dan's pantry and little local places like Luby's Cafeteria and places like that up through the 1960s. And that's really where it ends. And I talk a little bit about manufacturing and transportation in the area, too.
Why does the book end in the 1960s? I mean, was it just hard to find postcards later than that or any other reason?
Well, no. Honestly, I said that that would be a stopping point for many reasons. Number one, the length of the book. Number two, to me, that's an area that we can go into in another series, perhaps. Or some people know a lot about the 1800s in Fort Smith, but very few people know about the 19 teens and the 20s in Fort Smith. Very few people know about the 1950s in Fort Smith. Unless you're talking about, you know, Elvis or Chaffee, we really don't know a whole lot about the 50s. People don't discuss it like they should, and there are still, I would say, 40% of the buildings that are in this book are still around, for example.
So what was it like to research a book that uses postcards as the primary source material?
It was great because the research was the most fun part of the entire project. Digging up the postcards from different collections from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Library, the Chamber of Commerce, the Fort Smith Public Library, the Fort Smith National Historic Site, and in the Fort Smith Museum of History, for example, they all said, here are some postcards, would you like to look through them? And I said, sure. And I ran into Stan Kajawa, a man in Northwest Arkansas who has a great collection, who also has written postcard books, and through his collection, I was able to also find several on Fort Smith, and I think they helped tell the story of the people and the place.
So how much investigation did you conduct on the people who were sending and receiving these postcards that are featured in the book?
I did a little bit of that, but the editors honestly wanted me to not be concerned about that as much as I was, but I did a little digging about the first one in the book is dated September 10th, 1893, and that's the oldest one in the collection in this book. And I wrote a little bit about the people and a little bit back and forth, and there are some other postcards with a little bit of discussion or writing. In some cases, we do discuss the writing or the traveling. There's a salesman on page 48 that talks about how he's traveling through to Muskogee from Kansas City, Missouri, and he said he's very busy, and 270 miles from Kansas City is Muskogee, and 75 miles from Fort Smith, and this traveler probably took the Kansas City Southern Railway route through to Fort Smith, and that was interesting to dig a little bit about that.
So of the postcards that you came across in your research, which one or which few are your favorites?
I like the ones about Chaffee. Specifically, there's a chapel picture of a chapel on page 73. It's a late 1950s postcard that shows troops going into one of the many chapels at Fort Chaffee. And the story that I wrote about the local girls marrying the GIs through there was very relevant because my in-laws met that way. My father-in-law, James Lauren Janes, known as Lauren Janes to some and Jimmy Janes to others, met my mother-in-law, Ida Lou Turnipseed, was her maiden name, and she was from Spiro, Oklahoma. She was born in Scullyville, Oklahoma, and she worked at the Boston store down on Garrison Avenue for about 3 years in the 50s. When they first met, he didn't believe that that was her name, and, you know, he took off and thought she was making up some name and then came back the next day and apologized, and they were married for 56 years, and she was a big proponent for this book, and she recently passed away in November. And I probably wouldn't have done this book without her help.
So you're originally from Nixon, Missouri, right?
Yes, sir.
With you originally coming from Missouri, what prompted you to compile this book about the history of Fort Smith?
Because I fell in love with Fort Smith. We've lived here since 2003, and I've been coming to this area since about 1994. And just the people and the history and the whole culture behind it. This is a town that doesn't give up easily. This is a town that's steeped in history and not just, you know, the true grit kind of thing. There's a lot of history that's still left that we need to discuss, and I like doing that. I like finding out the little stories. I found out today, I got a letter in the mail from a woman in Fort Smith who was born 85 years ago, and she told me about her life story because she heard about this book and she thought I needed to know. And I was really glad to get that letter.
So looking at the history of Fort Smith through these postcards, do you feel like there are any lessons it can tell the Fort Smith of today and help it learn from its history?
Well, number one, it says don't give up, because there are tragedies throughout our history. The cyclone in 1898 that devastated much of the town. We also see the rise and fall of various businesses and industries. And, you know, it seems like every time we open the paper, another business closes and we think the world is over. But we have to understand that something better may be around the corner that we didn't realize. You know, I'm sure the people who worked at Norge didn't realize that Whirlpool would come in. And I'm sure the people who lost their jobs at Whirlpool, you know, thought that the world was over when it shut. But something else will come along. There's always something around the corner, I think, in the history of Fort Smith that keeps it going, and people need to keep their chin up, and they need to understand that there is something better.
So tell me a little bit about the editing process. How difficult was it to put this book together?
Over the course of 9 months, it was the culminating of all the postcards, putting them together, trying to figure out what is the story, you know, fact-checking, what was on the card, what was not on the card, what did I need to figure out, and then going to other sources and you know, double-checking what I had written and making sure that it was correct. I didn't want to put anything out there that wasn't correct. And then I went to, had two fantastic editors at Arcadia Publishing, Simone Monet Williams and Tim Summerall. Those are two editors that helped greatly. They really did an awful lot of work on this project, and they helped me tell the story. Primarily, it's chronological. And then these two suggested that we put certain pictures a certain way or, you know, in certain chapters. But primarily it looks at the history of the town and how we're a town that's looking at the past, but also using the past to look forward.
Do you feel like the postcards offer a unique view of history that other source materials such as journals or letters can't provide?
Well, they're the instant messages of the 1800s and the early 1900s. They were the moment in which people could dash off a very quick message and put it out there, or they would see a little cute picture, or they would perhaps get a snapshot of an event. There was a man named Marks who had a store down on Garrison Avenue, and when the tornado came through in 1898, he made postcards out of the damage, and you know, he took photographs and sold them in a store, and some people say that the money from that went to relief for the victims and also made his store very influential in the area. I think also the postcards tell a little bit about where we've been in terms of artistic license. We see a lot of different tones being used, graphics, and not only photographs, but also almost painted photographs. At one point, there were many photographs in the early 1900s that would be tinted in Germany and then sold as postcards here in the United States. And that practice even continued through World War II. And that's kind of interesting that we still had that trade of almost that hand tinting of postcards.
Okay, now that you've finished this first book and it's out to press and in bookstores, are you working on any other books for future publication?
Yes, Arcadia Publishing wants me to do another one on Fort Smith for the Images of America series. There have been other books about Fort Smith and Sebastian County, but nothing specifically on Fort Smith other than the postcard book that I've done. Stan Kajawa has done books on his postcard collection, but nothing as detailed as what I put out recently. And Lola Shropshire did one in 1998 for the Images of America series. And then Steve Hanley and Ray Hanley
did Sebastian and Crawford counties for the postcard history series, but Arcadia wants me to do another Fort Smith within the next 9 months or so. I think we'll do that, and then eventually they want me to do one on Taney County, Missouri, and possibly Stone County.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for your time.
Kevin Jones is an assistant professor of English and rhetoric at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. He will host book signings from 1 to 3 p.m. on January 12th at Hastings and Fort Smith, and at 7 p.m. on the 17th at the Fort Smith Museum of History. Also, he will speak as part of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Distinguished Lecturer Series. That discussion will take place from 2 to 3 p.m. January 23rd at the Pendergraft Health Sciences Building on the UAFS campus. And his book, Fort Smith, of the Postcard History Series, can be found at bookstores everywhere or online at arcadiapublishing.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
The internet is a schoolyard tool for sexual bragging and shaming.
I went back to class, and like half an hour later, my mother was in the school. And I couldn't even look at my mother because I felt hurt, and I also felt like I disrespected her.
Teens, mobile tech, and the new Scarlet Letter. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, beginning this afternoon at 3 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Sing a song of the Sierra.
Jimmy Wakely was a movie star, comic book hero, and a singing cowboy who became a crooner. He was also a songwriter, writing several of his own hits, like his Song of the Sierras, heard here. He was born in Mineola, Arkansas, February 16, 1914, and the family later moved to Oklahoma. In 1936, Wakely won a talent contest and made his radio debut in Oklahoma City. The legend is Cowboy star Gene Autry heard Jimmy Wakely's trio while on tour in Oklahoma and invited them to Hollywood. The trio's first screen appearance was in 1939's The Saga of Death Valley with Roy Rogers. Soon, the Wakely family had moved to California, and Wakely's singing group was appearing in B-grade westerns. The band was alternately known as the Jimmy Wakely Trio, Jimmy Wakely and his Rough Riders, and Jimmy Wakely and his Saddle Pals.
Saddle Pals, always together, in all kinds of weather, reeling, rocking, rolling down the trail.
Jimmy Wakely began appearing in his own westerns for Monogram Pictures, beginning with 1944's Song of the Range. Through the rest of the 1940s, Jimmy Wakely starred in 28 B-Westerns, including 1944's I'm from Arkansas. Most of Wakely's films featured his own songs. From September 1949 to July 1952, Jimmy Wakely's popularity was such that DC Comics even published a Jimmy Wakely comic book. Wakely recorded with Decca, Vocalion, and Capitol Records, among other labels, and started his own record label called Shasta. Although he was billed as a singing cowboy and usually dressed the part, Jimmy Wakely's singing style was urbane. He was obviously influenced by the crooners, especially Bing Crosby.
Now here's Jimmy. When it's round up fine in Texas and the bloom is on the sage, then I long to be in Texas, back riding on the range, just to smell the bacon fried when it's sizzling in the pan, hear the breakfast horn in the early morn, drink my coffee from a can, just to ride and rock and roll.
Jimmy Wakely's smooth singing style helped him when the movie Cowboy Craze played out. Wakely quit wearing the cowboy clothes but kept performing. He had a CBS network radio show until 1960 and had country and pop crossover success, and also became known for his Christmas albums. Jimmy Wakely continued recording through the 1970s, and many of his recordings remain in print. Jimmy Wakely's last performance was just 6 weeks before he died of emphysema on September 23, 1982, in Mission Hills, California. Here in its entirety is Lonely is the Hunter, co-written and performed by Jimmy Wakely of Mineola in Howard County.
Mm-hmm.
born to be a rambler. He was born to ride alone. When he gets weary, when he'd like to settle down, ever lonely is the hunter as he rides from town.
Another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, January 7th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Did you make New Year's resolutions?
Not really. I don't really ever.
Well, I made several, one of which was to exercise more. And so there's a new yoga class.
Ooh, I love yoga.
Hatha Style Yoga starting tonight at 5:30 at the Fayetteville Public Library, and it is free.
Y'all should try it. I love yoga.
Is it fun?
I do. Yeah, I do.
I don't know that I have a center.
I always thought I was incredibly clumsy, and I still am, but I can manage to balance in yoga. So.
And I can manage to balance a bowl of salsa and chips. So therein is the problem.
Or you can do it.
You can exercise a whole different way. There are three bands coming tonight to the Northwest Arkansas Showcase Theater at the Northwest Arkansas Mall. One of them is called We Came as Romans, and they are metalcore. Joining them will be Crown the Empire and Man vs. Malice. I love metal band names. Tickets are $17 at the door, and showtime is 7 o'clock.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. And it's time for a trivia question here on Ozarks at Large. Three lucky winners will each win a 2013 Tim Ernst calendar, plus two Malco movie tickets. This evening in Miami, Florida, number one ranked Notre Dame will take on number two Alabama Crimson Tide in the 2013 Discover BCS National Championship football game. Question: since the very first poll to determine a champion was conducted in 1869, what college football team has won the most national championships, and how many have they won? If you think you know the answer, email ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. Three lucky winners will each win a 2013 Tim Ernst calendar plus two Malco movie passes. Question again: since the very first poll to determine a champion was conducted in 1869, what college football team has won the most national championships, and how many have they won? Send your answer to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. This is Ozarks at Large. It might be a little colder outside in January, but clear, crisp winter days make for excellent viewing of the night sky. This Saturday marks the first in a series of free astronomy programs presented at Hobbs State Park by the Sugar Creek Astronomical Society. The program begins at 4:30 p.m. You can find a list of needed items or register at 479-789-5006. The iFringe program in the Office of International Students and Scholars at the University of Arkansas is looking for host families for our Friendship Family program. This is not a homestay program. Rather, Friendship Family matches families of all types from the community with international students from the U of A for a social relationship. Participants are asked to meet at least once a month with their international students to share their cultures and family life. For more information about becoming a Friendship Family host, please go to iss.uark.edu and click on Friendship Family Program. The iFriend program hopes to change the world one friendship at a time. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, and Alabama. Support for KUAF comes from SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, presenting a number of performances this season. For the season schedule or for more information, call 443-5600 or visit waltonartscenter.org. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas. I'll be joined tomorrow with host Kyle Kellums for an all-new daily edition of Ozarks. For now, happy Monday, and thank you for listening.